Hey everyone, Michelle Seidling here with another episode of Food Experience Unplugged. Today we'll explore the importance of being present in building healthy habits. Here to help us do that is Udo Erasmus, an acclaimed author, speaker, and founder of Udo's Choice. This podcast is available on multiple platforms, including YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and others. Please be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform to be informed as new episodes become available. If you enjoyed today's episode or any of our episodes, be sure to rate and review the podcast on your favorite platform. Be sure also to check out our website at foodexperienceunplugged.com for some resources as you begin your health journey. Udo Erasmus, welcome to Food Experience Unplugged.
Really nice to be here.
Oh, so happy to have you as such an acclaimed author and speaker, and you founded Udo's Choice, and I'm kind of giving away the all the excitement here for a minute, but
Well, not really. When people do that, I usually say, listen, everything good that you've heard about me is not true.
Well, here, I'll give you a minute to say what is true. If you could just take a minute to introduce yourself and tell us what brought you to this point in your life and in your career.
Well, the long story is I make the long story short. So I was born during the Second World War, and we were refugees when I was just under three, fleeing from the communists who were chasing us in trucks and tanks. And the Allies were shooting at us refugees, which was mostly women with young children, on horse-drawn hay wagons, trying to get the hell out of Poland, which was then part of Germany. And they were shooting at us. They were using us as target practice. And it was pretty hectic. So there are a couple of things came out of it. Safety, I never felt safe. A lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. Don't know who you can trust. Don't know what you can count on. And we made it out eventually. I got left behind, but we got reunited. So it was pretty hairy experience for a little kid, not one I would recommend. but it had an upside. The upside is it got me thinking really early. And I was in Germany when I was six. Adults were arguing about things I thought were pretty irrelevant. And the thought came to me is there must be a way that people can live in harmony. And then the second thought was, and I'm going to find out how. You know, like a little kid who doesn't know how complicated everything is, right? I was going to find out how. So that's been my driver all my life. And I got into, when it came to education, I got into science to figure out how things work, because it helps. Like if you don't know how things work and you don't know what you can count on, if you know how things work, then you can, you know, and that's what science is about, predict and control, right? Sure. Then you can predict what's going to happen and you can work with it. And then I got into biological sciences because I wanted to know how creatures work. And then I got into psychology to find out how thinking works. And then I got into medicine because I wanted to learn about health, but found out very quickly it's only about disease. They don't study health. And I went back into biological sciences because in biology, you actually study health because you're studying the normal functioning of normal creatures as opposed to the abnormal functioning of sick creatures. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up in biochemistry and genetics, but there was still something missing. And I left university and eventually got back into psychology, but I got into self-knowledge because what I really needed to know all those years when I was looking, is I needed to know how I work. Mm. Right.
Okay.
And so that's my background. I got poisoned by pesticides when I was 38 and the doctors didn't have anything that could help me. So I figured it out myself and I went into the research literature. I had the science background, of course, that was helpful. And looked at how health and nutrition are related and how nutrition and disease are related and ended up focusing on fats because they're the most confusing area and then made some contributions in that arena and then in digestion. And that's what the Udo's Choice stuff is about. And then I got into educating people and I traveled for 15 years, 6 to 9 months living in a suitcase, 40 countries. Pretty much talking about health. And you learn a lot when you do that. And one of the things that was always interesting to me is why is it? I met people who knew more than I did. Every person who came, every expert who came through their city, they were there. They took copious notes. They knew all this stuff. And they were still as sick as they were before they knew anything. And it's like, what is that thing that what gets in the way of good information being applied so that you actually get the practical benefits of it? And the conclusion I came to is people are not inspired. If you're not, because inspiration, when you're inspired, you get into a high energy state, and that helps lift you out of your thinking ruts and your habitual ruts. And then to make a little change or to do something new, it's actually kind of the part of the fun. But when you're not inspired, then it's all too much work, because changing habits is work, because you're going against a momentum that may have been, you know, years in the making and thousands of times practiced. So it's a practiced track in your mind that is much easier to go through than to stop and say, okay, I could go down that path, but let me go down another path. So then I got into inspiration, and I realized giving accurate information is important. But if you don't inspire people, they're not going to apply it. So then I started thinking about what else affects health. And the truth is everything affects health. So, and I'm talking about how how connected you are inside to yourself, whether you're in touch with the energy that is your juice, whether you're inspired, what you're doing physically, how you deal with crisis, survival smarts, I call that. How, you know, who you're with affects your health. That's why kids sometimes yell at each other, "You make me sick!" Right? So we even knew that when we were kids, that other people affect our health. And then environment affects our health. And then how you are with the big picture of coming to terms with the fact that you are in a human body, which is temporary and has a very short time to exist in a universe that's infinite, and to be okay with that. And to live aware of that, or present to that, but being okay with it, and not being saying, "Oh my God, I'm gonna die," and then being completely disabled by the thought, even though it's true. So, and that's basically, that brings me to the second moment. That what I'm very interested in is what it takes for people to become fully present in all of their being and their surroundings, and not lost in thoughts in their head. And then being in a position where they can literally deal with living as it occurs with confidence and skillfully.
Yeah, I love that. Oh my goodness, such a rich background. Just a question. As you were, you've had this idea, this spark when you were just a few years old, and going forward. With each area of focus in your studies and in your growing up years, were you formulating your own opinions, your own thoughts about different aspects of learning and development?
I would say because my early childhood was so confusing and so chaotic, I never really felt like I ever fit in the box. So my parents had gone through the first World War, then the Bolshevik Revolution that followed it, then the Depression that followed that, and then the Second World War that followed that. And their thing was, they didn't, especially my father, he said, "I can't stand big business or big religion or big industry or big anything, big government." He ended up living in the woods without electricity. I spent a couple of years there without electricity, built his own house, and he just said, "I just want to be left alone." And their thing to us, probably one of the biggest things that they taught us, was question everything. Because just because it's written doesn't mean it's true. And just because somebody says so doesn't mean it's true. So find out your sources. Look behind it. And I always felt like there was something I should do that would change the human race. And in order to do that, when I was in my 20s, every problem that happened on the planet, I would ask the question, why does this problem exist? And the answer was always because of you. Because of me. Not necessarily because I caused it, but because I've not made effort to address it. And so that was very motivating for me. It sounds like crazy in a way, but in a way it would be crazy. But what if 8 billion people each took responsibility for every problem on the planet? We wouldn't have that many problems. Mm-hmm. So taking it personally and saying, yes, let me be responsible and let me do what I can. At least let me do what I can. Because that's That's one of the issues of living, right? Is to address the issues that haven't been addressed. And that was highly motivating because it made me have to look behind it. So I would always say, oh, why is that problem? Oh, well, that's just a symptom. Well, what's the cause? So you go dig out the cause and say, okay, what if that's just a symptom? What's the cause behind that? What's the cause behind that? What's the cause behind that? And eventually you come to the original cause. And if you can address the original cause, everything that's downstream will happen automatically.
Okay.
And that's breaking it down in a way where I can actually address everything on the planet by just doing one thing. And again, that sounds kind of crazy. It sounds like, oh, that's too simple. No, it's not. It's not. But you have to look deeply to find out what is that cause.
Mm. And that thought about, you know, what contribution you can make, did that kind of pull you along in your various career and your study endeavors?
Well, I think what it did mostly, it gave me a way of approaching issues. Because it's always, okay, that's a symptom. Okay, do I like it? Do I don't like it? That's not the issue so much. But what is the cause? If I want to address it, what is the cause? What is the cause? What is the cause? And literally, you know, where that comes down to, just to blow the story, right? What it comes down to, everything, you know, we human beings are the only problem on this planet. Everything that's not working. I mean, we're not talking about natural cycles like birth and death. Those are natural and those are what they are. But everything that's not working, whether you're talking politics or you're talking health or you're talking relationships or you're talking environment, everything that's not working is not working because of the damage we've done to it. And then the question becomes, if we are the only problem on the planet, what is our problem? And again, you have to go behind. And at the core of every problem that we have created is a discontent that originated with our disconnection from our own being. And I'm not talking about our body. I'm talking about a deeper part of mind called inspiration, the energy that keeps you alive, and the awareness behind that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Which you could call whatever you want to call it. That would. So this is so. And how does that happen? So because you have to say, okay, if you're going to say that your problem is you're disconnected from yourself, well, how did that happen? Well, when you're in your mother's womb, when we are in our mother's womb, there's nothing to do, nowhere to go, everything's taken care of, and it's relatively safe. And in that place, we're floating around. I call it the Buddha tank. Right, we're floating around in this little ocean. Everything is, you know, muffled. There's not much to see, not much to hear, you know, not much to taste, not much to feel, other than our awareness, which is our ability to focus and to notice. Our awareness is at rest in its source, inside, in life. So you get 9 months of Buddha existence or master existence. And then you get pushed out, right? Mm-hmm. And then everything changes. Now you have to get to know the world because not everything's taken care of anymore. Now you have to cry for your diaper change and you have to cry for your bedtime and your food and whatever it is, right? And then you have to get to know the world that you're going to survive in physically for a while. And in the process of getting to know the world, awareness goes from being present inside and absent outside to being present outside and absent inside. So it's just a shift of awareness. It's a shift of the focus of awareness. And when we disconnect from the Buddha space, I'm just being cautious. We'll get there. When I disconnect from the Buddha space within me, where my contentment lives, where my wholeness is, you know, where the wholeness that I am can be felt, because there's no point, you know, you have wholeness and you don't feel it. What's the good of that, right? But it's there, and the peace that we want in our life when everything gets too crazy, that peace is already there. It's a state of being. But what's good is it if I'm disconnected from it, and if I'm disconnected from it, I am unpeaceful. Then I am discontent. Because contentment and peace are actually the same state of being, right? And so in that process of our awareness going out through our senses into the world, because we have to assess what's going on for survival. Is this friend? Is this foe? Or is this irrelevant? And then act accordingly. In that process of going out, and our disconnection from ourselves came what we sometimes call heartache, or emptiness, or yearning, or blues, or loneliness, maybe even depression, sadness, sorrow, grief, loss, feeling of loss. And so we get involved into the world, we don't realize that we've disconnected, because it's not a conscious process, it's an automatic process. And then we hook into things on the outside as substitutes. So I hope that my girlfriend will make me feel whole. But that's crazy, because number one, if she hasn't done her homework, she doesn't feel whole. So how's that going to work? But because I haven't done my homework of coming back home to myself, which is a deliberate process, that's the only way I'm going to feel whole, because the wholeness lives inside of me, not outside of me. And then whenever a distraction, so all of these distractions that we get into, whenever one of those distractions dries up, I feel that I feel the loss. But the loss is not about the person or the event. The loss is my fallback to my default state of disconnection. And I feel my disconnection. And if to interpret that appropriately, heartache is the heart calling my awareness to come back home to its source inside in life. And how do you do that? Some kind of stillness practice, some kind of meditation, deep meditation, where you literally disconnect from the world. So you turn out the light or close your eyes, whatever. And you disconnect from your thoughts, and you disconnect from your body, and you connect into the energy or the awareness inside, and you look around and to what you feel, what you see, what you hear. What does it feel like to be alive inside?
Now, do you consider awareness and presence the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're not always used the same way. Yeah, but you want to be fully present or fully aware, you know. And some people say present to something. We say aware of something, and it depends on where your focus goes. Awareness is the ability to focus. We have the freedom to focus wherever we want. And so the question we need to ask ourselves is, well, what is worth focusing on? Or what focus would give me the best experience of this temporary gift of life in human form that I have?
Okay. Now, where do, here at Food Experience Unplugged, we talk a lot about habits and habit building. Where does presence come in with regard to building healthy habits?
Okay, we don't give presence much attention. So we try to change habits without presence. And then how do we do that? Well, either you have one thought process, you decide to change the thought process to another thought process that will give you a different kind of attention. If you put it in practice, then then you will change a habit. And it's hard work. And you know how many times the weight loss program fails, or the, you know, I gotta think about things differently. It's really, really hard to do. What is beautiful about this track that I'm talking about, going back to self, it's beyond our thoughts, beyond our emotions. And in that place, I literally, when I go to that place, I can think about anything going on in the world and get very clear, simple, practical insights. The moment I have an insight, my habit has changed already. The moment, because I've tapped into a truth that is true for me, because it's my truth, it's my insight. So insight is very powerful. The moment I have an insight, the change is immediate. Almost immediate, because sometimes I still have a momentum in a habit, but I will recognize it, because from now on, because I've recognized something is true, and maybe what I'm doing is not, have been doing is not true, it's not aligned. it's not very difficult to make the change.
Because of that awareness that you're developing.
Because of the insight that comes from awareness, from being aware in my space.
Okay.
And the insight is just like, it's kind of like Einstein had this saying that I really like. He said, 99 times I think and get nothing. And one day I get quiet and float in silence and the answer comes to me. That's what insight is like. When I can get to the quiet place, there is an ocean of insights inside of every human being. You know, if you need help in how to live, or, you know, if you have questions about how you should live, why wouldn't you ask life? Why do you run everywhere else and ask experts, many of whom have other agendas that they don't tell you about? But life only has one goal, which is to take the best care that's possible to take of you. Life has only that one agenda for you and to take care of me, for me. So why not go to where the agenda is pure to get the insights that we need in order to live better in the world in the time that we have?
Okay. Wow. I love that. I love just being in tune, being aware of yourself and your surroundings and whatever habit or habits you're trying to form. That is super powerful.
Yeah. But because we have a momentum of being doers, you know, we're supposed to be human beings, but we've become human doings. We're addicted to activity. So sitting still, even though you're doing nothing, so should be the easiest thing to do. But we have find it the hardest to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of doing a practice, a stillness practice, that always shows up. Oh, that's boring. Yeah, okay. But notice how much peace is in the boredom. Mm-hmm. Notice how relaxed you can be in that boredom.
Yes, because we're so pulled in different directions.
Because if we have doing habits, you know, everything's do, right? Even though when you think about it, being is actually more important than doing. The reason why is because you can be without doing, but you can't do without being. So being is the foundation. If you don't know your being, you have no foundation. Presence is everything. Self-presence is more important even. Although when you live in the world, you got to do both.
Absolutely.
Right? Because that's why fully present in all of your being and your surroundings.
Yeah.
And that's possible. It's possible, but it takes practice.
Now, undoubtedly, you've had many different experiences working with people and seeing various levels of presence. Will you give us some examples of how that power is used in building habits and in other aspects as well?
Okay. I'm not sure I'll give you an example, but it goes like this. If something comes at me, automatically I'll react. When I'm able to get quiet, I don't have to react. I can actually become proactive. How you change a habit is to be in a state of being within your own self, in which that habit is not part of it. And I'll give you an example about myself. Okay. I was in a foreign country as a guest of a person, of a teacher. And I used to smoke when I started when I was 16. I quit when I was 30. And I quit lots of times because I know smoking is not good for me. And then I would go out in the woods because I spent quite a bit of time in nature. I go out in nature. There were no cigarettes there. I wouldn't smoke. I had no problem not smoking. I come back into the city and I would, not be smoking. And then I would have this thought that said, well, you know, now that I don't smoke anymore, I guess I'll just have another cigarette. Right? Then I have a cigarette and then I'd be right back into it. And I could never quit. And I did this for years and I smoked quite a bit. Right? The teacher that I visited, he said, please don't smoke while you're here. I don't know why you smoke. That's all he said. Mm-hmm. He didn't hammer me or anything. And so I thought about it and I said, well, it's his place. So it makes sense that I would live by his rules in his place. Or that rule, you know, it's that's his place, and he doesn't want to pick up cigarette butts, whatever it was, right? I said, okay, well, it makes sense. So I decided I would not smoke while I was there. That was a decision I made.
Okay.
And when I came back, and I was there for close to a month, when I came back to Canada, the desire to smoke was completely gone and has never returned.
Wow.
And yes. Except once, I dreamt that I was smoking. And it was a huge nightmare. Oh, my God, I started smoking. And I woke up and I was so relieved I wasn't smoking. That it was just a dream.
Now,
but it was literally, the desire to smoke was completely gone. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it shifted a state of being. And smoking is not part of that state of being. Mm-hmm. And that's why it never came back.
Okay. Now, to what do you attribute that to? Was it that person's statement of requesting not to smoke that really resonated with you, or what was it?
I think more than that. I think it was his state of being, and me absorbing that being in his environment. Different emotional states or different thought belief systems. Different belief systems carry with them different consequences. Carry with them different attitudes, carry with them different behaviors. It's like your beliefs create chemistry in your body. And that's, again, one of the reasons why it's hard to change habits. You create a chemistry in your body, and then that chemistry reinforces the belief system. Right?
Okay.
If you change the chemistry, and the best way to do that is with a clean state of being, with a non-verbal, non-belief based state of being, which is what presence is.
Okay.
Then you can either create a new belief system, or you can stop using a belief system, because you're in a place of choice. Because in the quiet place, that is the core of our being, anything is possible. You can go this way, or 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 you can go this way. Anywhere, any possibility is possible. And you're in a place where you can make a decision. And when you make the decision, you practice that, and it creates, your whole body changes, the chemistry changes. It's done neurally, hormonally, and memory-wise, changes to whatever you decide you want to become.
Okay, so this mindset and presence go hand in hand.
I would say presence, mindset comes out of presence by choice, and I would say presence is more foundational, more basic, more powerful for changing habits. That's why it's good to spend time with people who have the energy that you'd like to develop, right? That's why people go to teachers that live in that quiet place. It's like, because, you know, I mean, some people, if they would see a person like that and say, well, not interesting to me. But some people say, wow, this guy, you know, I've had people walk up me. I walked across a gymnasium. We had an exercise we were doing in a self-development course. And I walked from one end of the gymnasium to the other, and a guy ran up after me and he said, "Hey, there's something about you. I want to know what it is, because I want that." And it was, I wasn't even paying attention, but he noticed something, and then we had a conversation. Right? So it wasn't like I was looking. Let me lay my trip on him. let me lay my trip on somebody, right? No, because it's because you radiate. You cannot but bring to expression whatever is your state of being. And that's, your state of being is independent of what you necessarily say to people. You know, because sometimes people have a social story and they have a private story. And those are not always the same. But whatever is your private story, your true story, will come to expression. So if you're in a state of anger, or in a state of fear, then that state will trigger actions under certain circumstances.
So just right. refocusing your energies and your presence and your awareness toward.
Yeah, because we have, yeah, because on a battlefield, you know, every battle takes place in perfect peace. Because peace is everywhere. And it's in the warriors, it's between the warriors, it's around the warriors, it's above them, it's below them, it's everywhere. But the warrior's focus is not on peace. The warrior's focus is on you're my enemy, I'm going to kill you. And the other warrior on the other side, his focus is not the peace that is everywhere. His focus is, you are my enemy and I'm going to kill you. And then they play that game on a foundation of complete peace. Now, if their focus changed and they got to the focus of peace in them, they would probably put down their weapons and share lunch. Right? So focus is everything. Awareness is everything. Where is your awareness? What are you aware of?
Mm-hmm. And, okay.
And conscious is another word, like being conscious, right? How conscious are we of our thoughts that drive the direction of our life? Mm-hmm. And I would say not conscious enough. And that's why the stillness practice, because in the stillness practice, everything becomes conscious. Everything becomes known. Carl Jung said, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. And fate means at the end you say, I couldn't help it. I had to do it. I had no choice.
Sure, absolutely.
So presence and consciousness are the way that the unconscious is made conscious, because once you're conscious of it, you know, because we're talking about memories that happened when you were 2 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old, you know, way forgotten, but still there. And they're still running the show, right? You know, I was unsafe when I was in that refugee situation. I felt unsafe until I was 30, right? It's not rational. I don't feel safe. You know, you can be in a completely safe place and not feel safe because you have an idea of I'm not safe in your mind that is a memory of maybe a one-time event, right? Sure. Same with rape. You know, rape is like, it's a big deal, right? Maybe it happens one time and you repeat it 1,000 times when it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And so the question in trauma and that is based on that those kind of things that shouldn't have happened, things that obviously were awful. But at what point do you stop repeating, bringing the awful memory to mind, get focused on being present in your life and living your life as an expression of the magnificence of life rather than the memory of trauma?
Mm, I love that. Now, for those who are just starting to gain wrap their heads around awareness and presence, what would you recommend as a first step?
Well, I think that, and why I do this and why we're having this conversation, I think the first thing that is really important to understand, that whatever is the greatest possibility that is available to you, you already have it within you. It's not out there. It's not something you have to run around and do a bunch of stuff for. Everything you want, deep down, really want in your life, you already have. But you think you don't have it because you're not looking in the place where it already exists. Mm-hmm. So you need to change your focus, right? Because if the girl doesn't make me happy, because happiness is an internal thing, right? Then don't expect happiness from the girlfriend. Do your homework, find the happy within you at the core of your being, and then share it. And I would give her the same advice. And if two people both do that, then you can dance. Then you can have fun. Then the relationship can be beautiful. But if I expect you to do my homework and you expect me to do your homework, and we're always going to come up disappointed because we can't do that, right? Well, that's going to affect the relationship. I had a relationship like that. My marriage was like that. This is before I started doing this. And part of what rubbed my nose in the importance of what I'm talking about is that, because I thought, because I saw her and she's like, oh my God, you know, and she saw me and she's, oh my God, right? It was instant, mm-hmm. you know, And it was, and so what we didn't know, what she didn't know, is that I didn't know how to get to that in me. What she saw, I didn't get to that. See, we had never spoken. Sometimes the words make it clear that that what you just saw is not what is being experienced there. And, you know, and she thought, you know, I couldn't get to it. So I expected her to give it to me. She couldn't get to it in herself. She expected me to supply it. And that's what all of our fights were. If you look at the foundation of our fights, that's what all our fights were about.
Okay.
6 years
of that misunderstanding.
Yeah, because neither of us had done our homework, and we were expected the other one to do our homework for us. Right? It's a funny way of saying it, maybe. But, you know, and I say to people, you're not ready for a relationship until you have a committed relationship to your own life. And when you're in touch with your life, you will feel fulfilled. And when you feel fulfilled, you're not going to be always dragging on people to do stuff for you. Mm. Because you don't need it when you're fulfilled. You don't need more stuff.
That is amazing. I just love your whole angle, your whole mindset, your how aware you are personally, and how you're radiating that and teaching right. that to others.
Right. And then the thing is, you know, I can have an influence on you, maybe, but I have 100% control in my own being, because nobody else is in control there. You know, you don't have control maybe of outside events, but you have complete control of your state of being, should you want to pursue it. And then you don't, the blame goes away, because if I'm not doing my homework, and I expect somebody else to do my homework, and they don't do my homework for me because they can't, right? They won't, but they can't either. Then I'm going to blame them. Says, well, it was just the wrong woman, right? It was just the wrong woman, when the truth is I was the wrong man. Mm. Or you could even say, I wasn't the man. Because how are you going to be a man if you're not in touch with your being?
Absolutely. Right? Oh, my goodness. Yes. That is amazing. I love this focus. As we wrap up, Udo, how can people get in contact with you? This has been amazing, and we could certainly go on for hours. But as we wrap up, how can people get in contact with you, and what final bits of advice would you give?
Okay, there are two ways to get a hold of me. One is through a website called udoschoice.com, udoschoice.com. And I talk about oils and enzymes and probiotics and physical stuff that I work with. The other one is called theudo.com. And there we have information like what we're talking about. We have some courses and we post our podcasts. We have quite a few. But I love this topic because I think all the problems that we have on the planet that need to be fixed, that haven't been fixed over generations, that nobody seems to be able to get a handle on, are all based in our disconnection from ourselves. And unless we feel whole within ourselves by going home, unless we feel whole, we will not fix those problems. Because those problems were created out of us feeling unwhole and discontent and being destructive. When we feel whole, we're not destructive. I have never heard or read about or seen an act of violence that anyone perpetrated on anyone else in a moment of peace within themselves. Mm-hmm. So first you got to lose the peace, and then the conflict begins.
Very powerful. Thank you so much, Udo. Right. This has been amazing. And we look forward to so many more conversations and more presence.
I love to have them. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.